Buffett with the PoetryForKids.com podcast. And today I have the pleasure of interviewing Stephen Withrow. Now, I think that Stephen may be the modern embodiment of the Renaissance man. He's a poet, storyteller, journalist, author of some 6 books, including a book called Illustrating Children's Picture Books. He has a blog called Crackles of Speech, where he posts his own poetry online. He's a filmmaker who recently co-produced a documentary called Library of the Early Mind, a film about children's literature. And since he apparently doesn't have enough to do, he just founded a group called Poetry Advocates for Children and Young Adults. So welcome, Stephen. It's good to finally get a chance to speak with you.
Thank you. Thanks, Ken. It's great to be here. I'm honored to be part of this.
Oh, no problem. Now, I just want to know, when are you going to add rock star, professional athlete, and nuclear physicist to your list of talents?
I'm already working on all 3. And if I can add a 4th, I'm planning to go to the moon sometime before the decade is up.
I love it. All right. Well, now, tell me, you know, from the books that you've written over the past decade, and these are primarily books for adults, the books on illustration, it seems that your focus is more on illustration, and yet in your film, your blog, your foundation, your focus seems to be more on the writing. So maybe you can tell the listeners a little bit about your interest in children's literature, and in particular, your interest in children's poetry.
Sure. I came to poetry very early, when I started to speak and read and write. Poems and rhymes and songs really became, you know, the most important pieces of my life. I'm someone for whom books and story and poetry, you know, they're air and oxygen and food for me, and so I only grew to love children's books and children's illustrations and children's poems more and more as I got older. And I went on to study creative writing and children's literature throughout college and graduate school. And at first I thought of myself as a kind of an artsy MFA kind of poetry student. And I wanted to go on to become a professor of English literature. Mm-hmm. But as time went on, I got really fascinated by the publishing industry and by new technologies like the World Wide Web and social media that was really in its infancy when I was in college and graduate school. And I started to explore ways that these new digital tools could open up avenues for expression that no one had ever had access to before. My first interest was in comic books and comics illustration. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I saw in the 90s a field that was really starting to gel and come together in a way that it had never done before. I got very excited by the virtual community that was building around comics and how many young people, especially you know, women and people and minorities who were never part of the traditional comic book crowd were starting to get involved in that. And so that led me to write some books about design and illustration. But all that time on my own, I had been working on my own poetry and stories. And poetry really was always my first love. But I didn't see a community of poets, especially poets writing for young people, that I could easily, you know, take part in. And over time, you know, I just decided to build my own community and reach out to people that, you know, had similar interests.
Okay, and so this is how you eventually ended up creating the Poetry Advocates for Children and Young Adults. Is that right?
That is. After working on 6 books for artists and designers, I went on to make a documentary film, as you had mentioned, Library of the Early Mind,
right,
with a professor of mine, Ted Delaney. Mm-hmm. And we spent about 2 years going around the eastern part of the country and some other places interviewing authors and illustrators. And in that experience and in the subsequent screenings we've had of the film, it gave me a lot of confidence to try something ambitious and really dynamic with my passion for children's writing and for children's poems. So I decided to create a platform or a forum for poets, teachers, librarians, casual fans and readers of poetry to come together and share ideas and network. This is something that we had never had as a bunch of isolated communities and individuals around the world. Mm-hmm. And I saw the web and social media as having come to a place where, you know, you can have instant connections with hundreds and thousands of people. But I didn't see that same level of energy being directed towards poetry. There were certainly many, many efforts and many, many advocates out there for poetry, yourself included. We didn't have a central space where people could go for news and go for calendar events for readings and essays and histories and all the things that really solidify, an artistic community.
Okay.
So I wanted to create something along those lines.
And you've done a tremendous job. I mean, you're just looking at your list of your founding members and your advisory board, it reads like a who's who of children's poets and poetry advocates. So I know it's still very young. We're just a couple of months in now. But how is it going? Do you feel that it's gaining momentum? Are you getting notice from media? Or do you feel that you're still just dipping your toe in the water?
Well, I think we've achieved a tremendous amount in only a few months. You mentioned our advisory board. And we have some phenomenal people involved in that. Some poets, some professors, people like Sylvia Bardell are on the board, and J. Patrick Lewis and others. And that said, we've been able to get about 1,000 people worldwide to take part in this. And people have been tremendously active in blogging, commenting on the blog, working through Facebook and other media, and sharing the posts that go up, and actually contributing a lot of the material that I post and write about.
Right.
So it's been phenomenal. But at the same time, that said, I think we're really only at the first step of what this can really be, and I'm very excited to see where we can take this.
Yeah, and I should mention for the listeners that would like to see more about the Poetry Advocates for Children and Young Adults, it is at poetryadvocates.wordpress.com, and there you've got the blog and calendar and essays and other resources for people to use. And so how can the parents and the educators who listen to this podcast, how can they participate, aside from, of course, spreading the word, tweeting and blogging about it?
What I'm really looking for are, the thoughts and ideas about how we can really open up children's lives to poetry and to poems. I want that to come from the people who work with kids directly. Mm-hmm. The parents, the teachers, the librarians, the even the daycare providers and preschool teachers. I want them to post their ideas and their thoughts. And it doesn't even have to be something as formal or complex as an essay. It can be a lesson plan or, just a suggestion for an activity that would work with a child or maybe a group of teenagers. The more testimonials and case studies and even just conflicting information that people can put together, in a single place would be is really, I think, an extremely valuable resource. And when I started to really research children's poetry about 10 years ago, I was looking for simple things like lists of books that are particularly popular among different age groups and, you know, poets that are popular in other countries but may not have been heard of in the United States. And these are the kind of things that I think even just simple lists and book reviews and author interviews that people can contribute that I'm really reaching out now to get that material for the blog. And so far I've been very successful.
Well, good. Good. So, you know, I noticed that you were looking for book reviews, and I thought, well, the trouble is, of course, that we are, as children's poets ourselves, we're all sort of each other's cheerleaders. So I don't know that, for example, I could write an objective review of a book of children's poetry because I would be, rah, 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 this is, looks great, you know? So, now, is there anything in Poetry Advocates for children or for kids? Is there some way for kids to participate or to get involved, or are there resources there for them, or is this really strictly for their adult educators and caregivers that are that want to encourage them to have poetry in their lives?
Well, I decided to start with people who were poetry advocates, you know, already, people who define for me what poetry advocate means, and that, for the most part, were, you know, adults who work with children and who write for children. That brings us to a place now, a couple of months in, where I'm feeling comfortable enough to really expand the scope of PACYA. That's our little acronym.
I wondered how you pronounce that.
Yeah, it's sort of like pack your bags, you're out of here, I guess. But we're at a place now where I think I'm comfortable exploring options with the members of the group about how we make the site accessible for kids and for teenagers, mm-hmm. and what forms that might take. You know, one of the things I love to do is do an audio video archive of poets reading their own work and people reading poems they love. You know, so that use that, you know, that visual and audio media that, that kids really respond to well, and use that as a kind of a stepping stone to getting into some of the other aspects of what PACYA can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a lot of ideas that are starting to percolate now, and I think by this time next year, we'll have a really great interactive space for younger people.
And so, in a way, it strikes me that there's a little bit of overlap in what you're doing with what the Poetry Foundation is doing, except, of course, the Poetry Foundation isn't specifically focused on children's poetry, though they do have, you know, a new emphasis on children's poetry. They really are about poetry primarily for adults, and they have some of those audio resources and articles and so forth, too. But it strikes me that you're creating more of a community of children's poetry advocates rather than just you being an organization. I feel like I'm just completely mumbling here. do you know what I'm saying? That it seems like there's a little overlap, but yours seems more like a community, and it seems more focused on children's poetry.
Well, what I find a lot when I go into larger organizations, like the Poetry Foundation, which I respect very, very much. They've done some incredible work in starting the Children's Poet Laureate program and the Poetry Out Loud recitation contests competition. And, you know, I see enormous promise in what the Poetry Foundation can be, and I'd like to partner with them as much as I possibly can. What's the downside of a large organization like the Poetry Foundation is that a lot of the content that goes online is sort of static, mm-hmm. in that, you know, you'll post an essay about a poet, or you'll put up a selection of poems or some audio clips, but there's no way for discussion to easily build up around that piece of writing or that profile of a poet. Right. I shouldn't say there's no way. It's just that it's not as easy for people to communicate with one another around that feature.
Right.
And Pakia can do that, and I'm starting to figure out some digital tools that'll make that much easier. And I want people to feel as though, because I believe this so strongly, that poetry, and this isn't just children's poetry, it's poetry for anyone, is alive and well. We are not working in a dead, dying, decaying art form. I feel as though poetry right now is on the cusp of an incredible, incredible revolution. A revolution in popularity, in accessibility, in form and format. What I see for poetry is that the youngest generation, you know, my daughter is 6 years old, and when she decides that, if she decides that poetry is a important part of her life, she is going to be able to create work that, unlike anything we've ever seen or heard, because poetry now is so tied in with the other art forms of video and music and animation and even interactive gaming,
and dance and
yes. Absolutely. And sports. I don't feel personally that it loses anything by mixing with those forms. And one way, I'm a purist. I think, poetry is a medium of the breath, of the voice, of the body. But on another level, I feel that, the more we can invite collaboration, among the arts, the more that poetry can resume its place, I think, as one of the most effective and powerful forms we have.
Well, I want to say, I think you're absolutely right. One thing I've noticed, when I was a child, we didn't learn about poetry, we didn't read poetry, we didn't study poetry, at least at the schools that I went to. But, it was only 15 years ago, in 1996, that we got April as National Poetry Month. And it was only 5 years ago or so that we got a Children's Poet Laureate, a U.S. Children's Poet Laureate. So there's a lot of movement toward making poetry more an everyday part of American life. And I think that what you're doing with Poetry Advocates and building a community, a grassroots community of the people who are actually in the trenches writing the poetry and promoting the poetry, I think you're going to change the world.
Well, I hope that we all will. I really do. I don't really think that, as I said before, I don't really think there's anything broken about poetry at all. I think that if you look, for good poetry, you'll find it very easily. What the struggle I often find is that the history of children's poetry could easily be lost, or at least scrambled to the point where no one, 20, 30 years from now, we'll really have a great sense of how did children's poetry, particularly in America, how did it evolve? Mm-hmm. You mentioned someone like Valerie Wirth or Myra Cohn Livingston. These are names that mean the world to me and to people like Lee Bennett Hopkins. But, over time, if we don't start to preserve this history and to start to build the continuum that we can pass on to kids as they get older, it's very possible that names like Myra Cohn Livingston's might be just a footnote. And it's not that I think is terribly unfair to an amazing writer and an amazing advocate.
Mm-hmm. So before we go on too much further, I wonder, do you have a poem of your own that you might like to share with the listeners?
Absolutely, yes. Thank you. I'm lucky enough to be published in two of Sylvia Vardell and Janet Wong's e-anthologies.
That's right. The Gift Tag series. I was just talking with Janet about that recently.
Sure. And the two that I'm a part of are the P-Tag, which is a Poems for Teens, and the most recent, which is Gift Tag, which is a holiday book. And both of them are, and I should say all three of them, because the first one, Poetry Tag Time, is just phenomenal. But the two that I was actually lucky enough to be a part of, I'll read one poem that is in Gift Tag, the most recent.
All right.
And the way that this works, and I think Janet may have said this last time, is that each of the poets had a photograph that we worked from as a springboard for our poem. And we had to write a short sort of prose connection piece about how we sort of the poem was inspired by the photograph.
And there was also a size limit, wasn't there?
There absolutely was, and that was the challenge for me, because we had, I think, about a 10-line limit, and the poems had to be very narrow on the screen. So we had limits in what we could express, you know, and I had chosen a photo of an old sled. I did a lot of sledding as a kid. And I wrote this short prose piece, which says, seeing a photo of an old sled brought memories of sliding down snow-crusted slopes with my sisters and brother. Once, our parents let us stay out after sunset, and moonlight made everything feel alive. My poem uses an Irish verse form with a name I unfortunately can't pronounce. But it's a little kind of Celtic haiku that you have a certain number of syllables per line and a certain rhyme scheme. So it's a challenge, but I feel that form... I don't write always in form, and I don't always write with rhyme, but I feel that the more compact and compressed, you know, that you try to make a poem, the more you have to really, you know, dig in and try to find the absolute right words, the absolute right syllables for your poem.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. The more restrictions you place on yourself as a writer, whether it's through form or, you know, whether it's through meter or rhyme or line length or poem size or syllable count, the more restrictions you place, the more you really have to work to get that exactly just right.
And this poem is called Night Sledding.
All right.
Night sledding. Moon mound snow. Slalom race. Chill bright plumes frost your face. Talons sharp, runners grip, twin tracks bite, hill's white lip.
I like it.
Thank you. I should say one thing about it. That poem started out probably 40 times as long as that, and I whittled and sculpted away to find that and tried many different forms before I came upon one that I liked, and that was actually suggested to me by J. Patrick Lewis, to try that form. So,
yeah, wonderful, wonderful. So, Stephen, do you have perhaps one more poem you would like to share with the listeners before we wrap up?
Absolutely, sure. This is a poem... that really focuses in on the music of language and the music that's in nature. I think it's something that actually would make a good concept book, a good picture book, so I might push it in that direction. But it's called Underground Sounds. Hollow gurgle from a well. Crack of black rat snake's eggshell. Squirm of earthworm tunneling slow. Willow roots wrap the world below. Worker ants stamp and tromp downhill. Purr of rabbits slumbering still. Moles scratch holes with scrabbling claws. Mice tap warnings with watch-out paws. Dry leaves crumble. Termites grumble. Dirt gaps gape. Loose stones tumble, weedy shoots frizzle, drink up drizzle, dewdrops sink as wasp wings sizzle, slug slime shivers, snail tracks shake, cold makes quakes of frozen swell, night voices echo down a hollow well.
My goodness, that is very, very evocative.
Thank you. Thank you very much for letting me read that.
Oh, my pleasure. So now, if people want to find out more about you and your poetry, where do you recommend they look?
They could go to my blog at cracklesofspeech.blogspot.com. And I'm increasingly putting up a lot of my own work and my own writings about poetry on the Poetry at Play blog for poetry advocates and for children and young adults mm-hmm. at the URL you mentioned. So, you know, I think there, if people want to reach out to me, they can find my contact info through either of those sites, and I would love to talk with them about their experiences with poetry and share some of their work.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on and letting me interview you, Stephen. I really appreciate it, and I wish you absolutely the best of luck with Poetry Advocates. I think it's a marvelous thing you're doing.
Thank you very much, Ken. And I just want to say that you were actually one of the people who really inspired me to do this. You know, I was in graduate school at Emerson College, and I was doing my thesis about children's poetry, and I reached out to you by email years ago, and you answered many of my questions about poetry, and your site was really just getting started at that time. And, you know, but I felt like, you know, somebody else gets it. You know, somebody else sees and hears what I see, and you've just kept on with it. And I've been, you know, I follow your books and your site all the time. So I'm really honored to be able to bring it sort of full circle.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that. Well, thank you very much, and take care now.
Take care.
This has been Ken Nesbitt with the PoetryForKids.com podcast, interviewing children's poetry advocate Stephen Withrow. Music today was provided by Kevin MacLeod.